Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, April 13th. Diamondback Oklo signed deal for power agreement. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. In search of electricity to power its operations, Diamondback Energy is turning to nuclear energy. The Midland-based operator has signed a letter of intent to collaborate with Oklo on a 20-year power purchase agreement, or PPA. Under the agreement, Diamondback will utilize the small modular reactors manufactured and operated by Oklo, known as the Aurora Powerhouse, capable of generating 50 megawatts of electric power to Diamondback operations near Midland. Oklo will license, build, and operate the powerhouses under a 20-year PPA term, which can be extended for an additional 20 years. Oklo is a fission clean power technology and nuclear fuel recycling company. Quote, "We are proud to announce our LOI with Diamondback to supply clean and reliable electricity to their operations," Bonita Chester, Director of Communications and Media at Oklo, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Quote, "Increasingly, operators are seeking for solutions to meet their growing energy demands while prioritizing low-cost, high reliability, and emission-free sources," end quote. Beyond operators like Diamondback, Oklo is engaged in active dialogues with a range of potential customers, including data centers, defense agencies, factories, industrial facilities, rural, off-grid communities, and utilities, Chester added. In a statement announcing the agreement, Oklo founder Jake DeWitt commented, quote, "The collaboration between Oklo and Diamondback represents a significant step towards emissions reductions and supporting national energy security by providing reliable access to electricity to power domestic energy operations," end quote. DeWitt, who traveled to Midland last October, said during his visit, the small modular reactors Oklo manufactures can help close the transmission gap between the growing demand for electrified oil field equipment and available electricity on the grid. He came to Midland with Chris Wright, Chief Executive Officer of Liberty Energy, which has invested $10 million in Oklo. Chester told the Reporter Telegram the company is conducting regulatory work with the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission to support its first commercial deployment of the Aurora Powerhouse in 2026 or 2027 in Idaho. Quote, "This work for our first plant is significant because we are pursuing a combined license application, or COLA, for design, construction, and operations, which is expected to be more efficient and repeatable. In other words, future COLAs can be filed as subsequent COLAs to the initial reference COLA. This enables us to offer our customers a timely, clean, reliable, and affordable solution," she wrote. New analysis doesn't see peak oil demand for a while. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Some analysts are pushing back on expectations global oil demand will peak or plateau by the end of this decade. Quote, "Both OPEC and IEA global oil demand estimates require a significant change in consumption behavior or a reversal of off-oil measures over a short period. History is not in their favor," Al Salazar, director at Enverus Intelligence Research, wrote in his report, pushing back on peak oil demand. Instead, he wrote, EIR analysts believe the rate of demand growth will gradually slow, but not peak. EIR forecasts global demand will grow to about 108 million barrels a day by 2030. However, the regional dispersion of the growth changes dramatically. Salazar provided the Reporter-Telegram with a graphic showing the oil demand growth rate in the U.S. falling from 2024 to 2035, along with demand in Europe and Asia. Chinese demand growth will be cut in half during that time, he pointed out, and is replaced with other emerging Asian regions like India. Quote, the fascinating thing about the Permian is all the associated gas that comes with the oil production, Salazar wrote. For the Permian to be able to seize the opportunity of increasing oil demand, extra gas takeaway capacity is needed soon, especially if flaring is frowned upon. In short, the Permian can provide the oil. Its biggest challenge is accommodating the natural gas that comes with it, end quote. EIR is basing its expectations on several pieces of evidence. First, fuel economy standards have underwhelmed their stated targets, and second, electric vehicle momentum appears to be slowing in the U.S. EIR analysts do see some headwinds for demand, particularly after 2030. One headwind is rising supply costs, and the lack of new supply projects is likely to push oil prices higher, especially after 2030. Those higher prices, combined with off-oil measures like electric vehicles, could result in peak demand in the 2030s. Quote, in the 2030 to 2035 period, peak demand, we think, is likely to occur due to high prices curbing demand in combination with an acceleration of off-oil measures like a rise in electric vehicles, Salazar wrote. EIR calculates that 3.7 million barrels a day will be displaced by electric vehicles and single-use plastic bans by 2030. While the International Energy Agency forecasts electric vehicles will displace 3.4 million barrels of oil a day by 2030, EIR puts that at only 2.7 million barrels per day. While EVs currently have negative momentum in the U.S., EIR sees the vehicles gaining significant market share by 2035. EIR calls the impact of global single-use plastic bans on oil and natural gas consumption a key blind spot. It cites a forecast from BP's chief economist that such a ban could displace 1.5 million barrels a day by 2030. It also cites an IEA forecast that 800,000 barrels per day would be displaced. EIR's own forecast is for about 1 million barrels a day to be displaced. Overall, EIR's analysis does not see the needed material shifts in consumption per capita trends by region and product, nor does it see the disconnect between economic growth and oil consumption needed for oil consumption to peak prior to 2030. Quote, our demand forecasts result in a world where OPEC's influence on oil price strengthens, supporting the group's preference for Brent prices of $85 to $105 per barrel, said Salazar in the report. Texas oil and gas production shattered records in 2023. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Texas oil and natural gas producers shattered records for statewide production in 2023, according to the Texas Railroad Commission. The commission said Texas oil production hit a record 1.92 billion barrels in 2023, about 51 million barrels more than the previous record of 1.86 billion barrels set in 2019. Texas natural gas production set a record at 12.01 trillion cubic feet, besting the previous record by over 13%. And agency figures show the Permian Basin dominated production. According to commission figures, Midland dominated Texas counties in oil production, producing 224,900,000 barrels last year. Martin County was a close second with 213,035,000 barrels, followed by Reeves County with 167,395,000 barrels. Reeves County was the state's top natural gas producing count with 1,092,000,000 MCF of production. Webb County followed with 1,042,000,000 MCF. Midland County placed third with 817 million MCF. Quote, Texas's new production and export milestones continue to highlight the Lone Star State's role as a global energy leader, showcasing that energy leadership starts and should stay in Texas, said Texas Oil and Gas Association President Todd Staples in a statement. TXOGA Chief Economist Dan Foreman added, quote, Texas's strong performance across the energy value chain has meant that U.S. energy increasingly depends on our state. Ample production has replenished oil and natural gas inventories and kept downward pressure on consumer prices despite solid domestic consumption and record highs for oil and natural gas exports. It's a remarkable productivity narrative, end quote. In announcing the production records, Wei Wang, the commission's executive director, commented, quote, these production records are beyond impressive and reflect how Texas continues to provide reliable domestic production for the nation. As the state's oil and gas regulator, the RRC is committed to our critical mission of supporting Texas's economic growth that benefits Texans. Production taxes collected from the oil and gas industry pay for our schools, highways, and the state's rainy day fund. The commission will continue its hard work to ensure the state remains at the forefront of the energy sector. End quote. 2023 Top 10 Oil Production Counties in Barrels. Midland, 224,924,000. Martin, 212,035,000. Reeves, 167,395,000. Loving, 146,444,000. Howard, 137,214,000. Carnes, 99,049,000. Upton, 97,057,000. Glasscock, 61,301,000. Andrews, 54,333,000. Ward, 53,814,000. 2023 Top 10 Gas Production Counties, measured in 1,000 cubic feet. Reeves, 1,092,814,000. Webb, 1,042,394,000. Midland, 817,564,000. Panola, 686,308,000. Martin, 530,178,000. Loving, 510,175,000. Harrison, 456,398,000. Culberson, 438,221,000. Upton, $399,016,000. Reagan County, $376,134,000. Top five oil production years, measured in crude oil and condensate. 2023, 1.92 billion barrels. 2019, 1.86 billion barrels. 2020, 1.77 billion barrels. 2021, 1.75 billion barrels. 2022, 1.71 billion barrels. Double E Pipeline launches open season. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Unsubscribed capacity has prompted Double E Pipeline to launch a non-binding open season for firm transportation on its system. The open season will end April 29th. Double E officials tell the Reporter Telegram there is currently 500 million cubic feet per day of unsubscribed capacity. That excludes any additional capacity that will be created through a centralized compression project. The company has not undertaken any expansion projects. Double E is a 135-mile Federal Energy Regulatory Commission-regulated interstate natural gas transmission pipeline that commenced operations in November 2021 and provides transportation service from receipt points in the Delaware Basin to various delivery points in and around the Waha hub in Texas. Double E is owned by subsidiaries of Summit Midstream Partners LP with 70% ownership interest and ExxonMobil with a 30% ownership interest. Summit Midstream Permian 2 LLC operates the pipeline. Summit Midstream Partners provides natural gas, crude oil, and produced water gathering, processing, and transportation services in the Appalachian Basin, the Williston Basin, Denver-Julesburg Basin, Fort Worth Basin, and Piceance Basin. It has an equity method investment in the Double E Pipeline. Projects recycle oil field wastewater. Pilot efforts aim to cheaply purify brine to reduce disposal, bolster irrigation supply. The story was written by Amanda Drain. Freshwater resources in West Texas are dwindling at the same time the oil country is struggling to dispose of dirty, unwanted oil field wastewater that is spewing from leaky wells and triggering earthquakes. It's a dual challenge that an emerging industry is working to solve. New pilot projects in the Permian Basin of West Texas and southeastern New Mexico are testing technologies that they hope can cost-effectively purify the chemical-laden brine that flows up alongside oil during the production process so it can be reused. Regulators and oil companies are heavily involved as they aim to usher in a new era of oil field wastewater recycling. The premise is nothing new. Some of this wastewater is already recycled for reuse in fracking, but efforts to recycle billions of barrels of water are gaining new momentum as the Texas Railroad Commission cracks down on underground wastewater disposal in areas of intensifying earthquakes, leaving oil companies with fewer places to put it. Meanwhile, arid West Texas and New Mexico are looking to bolster freshwater supplies and increasingly see opportunity in treating the oil industry's wastewater, also known as produced water, for reuse in irrigation, for the production of new fuels such as hydrogen, and to recharge drying bodies of water such as the Pecos River. The practice of recycling this water is gaining traction out of necessity, said Mike Hightower, program director of the New Mexico Produced Water Consortium. Quote, I think within 3 years, we're going to see recycling efforts start exploding, he said, noting that Texas alone needs to come up with 7 billion gallons of new water a day by 2050 to address a growing gap between freshwater supply and demand. And because regulators and hydrogeologists believe that wastewater underground is correlated with a rash of earthquakes shaking the oil country, as well as a worrying trend of water returning to the surface through old wells, quote, we can't continue to inject like we do. Quote, why am I bullish? I need to be, end quote. Wastewater handling is an essential part of the oil production process, especially in the Permian, where 5 to 9 barrels of super salty water laced with chemicals can come up with a single barrel of oil. This flowback is a mix of the water used to frack the well and water trapped with oil in rock released by the production process. Without places to put the water or recycling facilities capable of treating it, oil companies could be forced to stop extracting oil in some areas of the oil-rich basin. It's a growing threat, given that earthquakes in the area are still trending alarmingly high, said Ryan Hassler, vice president of oilfield service research at Rystad. Quote, what's at stake at the worst end of this is having to shut in drilling and completions activity, Hassler said. The trick is getting regulators to set new standards for treating the oil field wastewater and bringing the cost of recycling technology down to a point where it's competitive with disposal, researchers said. To that end, there are 8 active pilot projects feeding fresh data to regulators and industry consortiums. Until there are clear regulatory guidelines on how to process the water, oil companies remain reluctant to invest in recycling facilities, Hassler said. The recycling units could cost as much as $30 million apiece, according to Joe D. Almeida, Occidental Petroleum's Director of Water Strategy and Technology, who spoke during a recent conference in Houston hosted by the Produced Water Society. To make the investments, Oxy would want to know more about regulators' expectations. In response to industry hesitance, the Railroad Commission's chief engineer, Ted Wooten, assured the conference's audience that it would be up to the industry to do the research needed for standard setting. Quote, we would help implement what you establish as reasonable and good practices, Wooten said. But you have to do that publicly because we have to have public trust in what you say, end quote. Produced water often contains benzene and other potentially harmful chemicals, so pilot projects underway are working to prove they can filter out chemicals of concern as well as desalinate brine to standards that would be accepted for various purposes. A pilot project south of Midland by Texas Pacific Water Resources uses a proprietary multi-step process involving pretreatment, desalination, and reverse osmosis that pulls heavy metals and other toxic elements from water, removes salts, and produces water clean enough to sustain crops, said Adrian Lopez, the company's technical research and development manager. Crops appeared healthy after 6 months of study, and preliminary results were positive, she said. Alfalfa is a good crop to study because it can tolerate more salt than many plants. It is a profitable crop that could offset recycling costs, and it can absorb more water than many plants native to dry West Texas, making it a fit for an industry looking to dispose of water through irrigation rather than underground disposal, Lopez said. Quote, an alfalfa field will uptake quite a bit of water, she said. Desalination is expensive, which poses a technical challenge for water as salty as this, which often requires multiple rounds of desalination before it can be reused. Quote, "That's obviously what a lot of these pilot projects are working toward, trying to figure out new technologies and ways to do this at scale," Hassler said. "Nobody's been able to crack the code at scale, so there's a lot of different approaches that are being tried," end quote. A separate project from Circle Verde Water in Coahoma uses high-pressure natural gas to filter water in one step, a process the company believes would be cheaper and more energy efficient. How is it doing that? Circle Verde CEO Joseph Alexander was coy in his answer, citing pending patents. Quote, "That's kind of a secret," end quote. Water scarcity and clean energy collide in South Texas. The story was written by guest contributor Dylan Bador from Inside Climate News. Chemical company Avina Clean Hydrogen Incorporated has purchased the last available water supply from the Nueces River of South Texas, raising concerns of regional scarcity as reservoirs dwindle and drought persists. Avina's Nueces Green Ammonia Plant plans to separate the hydrogen from water, convert it to ammonia, and export it as a high-tech fuel alternative to oil and gas. It's one of several such projects currently proposed in Texas, driven by federal subsidies. Governments and scientists say this technology plays an important role in the transition away from fossil fuels. But officials in the nearby city of Corpus Christi have warned that the project could threaten water supply for more than 600,000 regional customers. Quote, "Increased water drawn solely from the Nueces River system could dramatically increase the potential for scarcity," wrote Corpus Christi's Director of Intergovernmental Relations, Ryan Skrobarczyk, in a March 1st memo to state lawmakers, first reported by the Corpus Christi Caller-Times. Quote, "A new large-volume user of the Nueces River will require extensive and exact monitoring to avoid increased drought restrictions," end quote. Over the last decade, Corpus Christi stretched its water supply to its limits, selling vast volumes of Nueces River water to a string of major industrial users, hoping to meet the new demand with several large desalination plants. But those plants still haven't materialized. Meanwhile, the new industrial customers have ramped up operations while a multi-year drought bore down. Local residents have been under water use restrictions for more than 600 days as reservoirs have fallen below one-third full. Although Corpus Christi holds rights to the vast majority of Nueces River water, it doesn't hold them all, as it was recently reminded. The only other significant right belongs to the Nueces County Water Improvement and Control District No. 3, which serves the towns of Cal Allen and Robstown. It has rights from 1909 that were originally intended to flood crop fields and haven't been used in decades. That's where Avina found the means to purchase 5.5 million gallons of treated Nueces River water per day, enough for all 38,000 residents of Cal Allen and Robstown to each flush their toilets 90 times daily for the next 25 years. Quote, "Do I want them there? No, but I can't be biased," said Marcus Alanis, general manager of the Nueces County Water Control and Improvement District No. 3 outside of Corpus Christi. "I don't have a right to tell somebody that I cannot feed them water," end quote. He cited rules from the Texas Public Utility Commission that listed five reasons why water providers may refuse service: compromising the regional supply wasn't among them. Quote, "It's just the fact that we're pulling more out of the reservoirs than we're putting in. But that's not for me to say," Alanis said. A spokesman for Avina in New Jersey, Karen White, said the company, quote, "takes seriously the water and energy nexus and is engineering the most water-conscious plant design, opting for dry cooling, reuse, and reduction wherever possible," end quote. In a March 6th email to Corpus Christi City Council, City Manager Peter Zanoni warned the Avina project could increase water prices to all city water users. Quote, "The loss of millions of gallons of water a day will have an impact on our water supplies. To backfill that loss will potentially result in rate impacts to all Corpus Christi water customers," Zanoni wrote. The City of Corpus Christi and its water department declined to answer questions. The hydrogen boom. Avina is one of at least 30 hydrogen and ammonia projects currently proposed in Texas, according to data from the Environmental Integrity Project, following federal legislation that laid out financial incentives for fossil fuel alternatives aimed at reducing emissions of greenhouse gases. Quote, "In the future, hydrogen will be used to replace diesel," said Joe Powell, director of the Energy Transition Institute at the University of Houston and a former chief scientist at Shell. Quote, "I see it as a good jobs transition opportunity for this Houston region to be securing its place in the future," end quote. Most of those projects produce hydrogen the old-fashioned way from natural gas, but incorporate new measures to capture the high volume of carbon emissions and inject them underground for disposal instead of releasing them into the air. 10 of the projects use a method called electrolysis that doesn't directly involve oil or gas. Instead, it uses a large volume of water and a tremendous amount of electricity to separate the hydrogen from water molecules. When powered by clean energy, the process releases no carbon emissions. The technology isn't new, but it wasn't considered economically feasible until the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 laid out steep federal subsidies for hydrogen projects. One such project in North Texas plans to build 1.4 gigawatts of wind and solar power generation and pump 500,000 gallons of groundwater per day to produce 200,000 kilograms of hydrogen for fuel. Another project on Matagorda Bay will use water to produce hydrogen for so-called e-fuels. Avina also plans a second electrolysis plant in South Texas to fuel furnaces for steel production. But there's a hang-up. Hydrogen gas is nearly impossible to transport. It needs to be liquefied at about minus 500 degrees Fahrenheit and then held at that temperature. So instead, scientists devised an alternative. Convert the hydrogen to ammonia, a stable liquid made of hydrogen and nitrogen, ship it overseas, then reconvert to hydrogen. It's an inefficient process. Up to 40% of the original energy input is lost in the production, conversion, and reconversion of the hydrogen, said Hugh Daigle, an associate professor of petroleum engineering at the University of Texas, who has studied the hydrogen economy. But it produces a carbonless fuel that can power heavy vehicles without harmful emissions. Quote, "To make one molecule of H2, it takes one molecule of water," Daigle said. "If developed at scale," he said, "that is going to take a lot of water," end quote. Nueces County Ammonia Plant. The Avina spokesperson, White, said the company selected its Nueces County location based on its proximity to renewable energy resources. Wind farms cover millions of acres in South Texas, and its relay access to the port of Corpus Christi. Federal tax incentives require electrolysis projects to run on renewable energy, with extra benefits if the energy projects are new. White said Avina's Nueces ammonia plant will be powered by 3.5 gigawatts of new renewable power projects, but those contracts haven't been finalized yet. The news of another water-intensive industrial project in the region surprised Encarnacion Serna, a retired chemical engineer who spent his career in local refineries. Quote, "They keep bringing in more and more industry, and there is no water," he said. "It's a horrible disaster just waiting to happen," end quote. Serna, who is 72, has nothing against the industrial sector. He raised his family while working in these plants, including 5 years at ExxonMobil, 15 years at Occidental Chemical, and 3 years at Air Liquide. But, he said, it's gone too far. He listed the recent major additions to the region's waterside industrial sector, Cheniere LNG, Voestalpine Steel, Chemours Chemicals, and a trio of massive new oil export terminals, among others. One new plastics plant by ExxonMobil and the Saudi Basic Industries Corporation has contracts to use up to 25 million gallons of treated water per day. All this growth was supposed to be supported by the development of several new seawater desalination plants. But while the industrial customers are now operating, plans for the desalination plants have floundered, mired in years of delays. Quote, "They spent millions of dollars pushing desalination, and all the money went to lawyers, permitting, and public relations," Serna said. "The idiots sold water they didn't have," end quote. Avina plans to produce 3.2 billion gallons of ammonia per year at the Nueces County plant, according to its application. Serna calculated how much hydrogen that would require and how much water in turn, coming up to 9.5 million gallons per day, almost twice Avina's contracted water supply. Alaniz, manager of WCID No. 3, said Avina will put in groundwater wells to make up the difference. The company did not respond to questions about its total planned water use. WCID No. 3's 1909 water rights from the Nueces River allow for 10.5 million gallons per day. Originally, that water was meant for crop irrigation, but over time, the farm fields turned into neighborhoods, which use much less water. Still, WCID No. 3 held onto its rights. Quote, "This will be our first industrial customer," Alani said. "Until you can figure out how we can get more water, it's probably my last," end quote. This story is published in partnership with Inside Climate News, a nonprofit independent news organization that covers climate, energy, and the environment. Sign up for the ICN newsletter. Disclosure: ExxonMobil Corporation and the University of Houston have been financial supporters of the Texas Tribune, a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization that is funded in part by donations from members, foundations, and corporate sponsors. Financial supporters play no role in the Tribune's journalism. This article originally appeared in the Texas Tribune. The Texas Tribune is a member-supported nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texans on state politics and policy. Learn more at texastribune.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, April 13th, 2024. Religion. Jesus calls heaven the great banquet. Parable emphasizes the importance of accepting God's invitation. By Bob Campbell. The parable of the great banquet in Luke 14:15 through 24 is a story symbolizing God's invitation for sinners to repent, accept Jesus Christ as their Savior, and join the celebration of the redeemed in heaven. That's according to ministers Eric Stadler and Alan Stanglin, who say Jesus' emphasis on food in the parable is consistent with imagery that's used throughout the Bible. The person who gives this great banquet is God, said the Reverend Stadler, pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church. Verse 16 says many guests had already gotten one invitation, but they all began to make excuses. Then the master became angry and invited other people. God wants everybody to be part of his kingdom. The scary part is the last verse, where he says the people who didn't come will never get a taste of his banquet. We give excuses why we don't go to church, because we put earthly priorities over spiritual priorities. Stadler said God is loving and patient, but the consequences of refusing his invitation can be severe. We never know when we're going to die, so why not take advantage of the opportunity and be prepared, he asked. God's invitation is free. It's there, and we just need to be part of his kingdom through Christ. Stanglin, minister of Golf Course Road Church of Christ in Midland, said the Bible often refers to food and drink as the reward of the obedient. I think heaven is a big feast with the best of meats and the finest wines for people from the north, south, east, and west, Stanglin said. Everything about heaven is food on big tables where people experience community with friends like them. This meal is for everybody, but we have to accept the invitation. God doesn't force himself on us. Stanglin said the juice and unleavened bread from the communion table are a prelude to the heavenly banquet. If we're feeling lonely and left out, we can go have a meal with our parents and family because these people know all our faults and shortcomings, he said. They know everything about me, and they still love me. People are eating and drinking on every page of the Bible, like the feast given for the prodigal son. The main point is that the meal is for everybody being forgiven and accepted. It's about belonging and being part of this eternal family. You're invited. There is a place setting with your name on it. 50 Years of Credit and Still Learning by Reverend Dr. Don Weeks, pastor of Christian Connection Church. Did you know that this year marks the 50th anniversary of women in the United States being able to have credit cards in their own names? The Equal Credit Opportunity Act, ECOA, was introduced in 1973 by Representative Bella Abzug and was signed into law by President Gerald Ford October 28, 1974. Only in my lifetime have American women become able to build up credit in order to develop their own financial health and independence. It is no secret to my readers that I am a passionate proponent of the full equality of women. Too many people assume that Christianity teaches the subordination of women. On the contrary, Jesus Christ lifted women out of oppression and into abundant life on multiple occasions. After all, he chose a woman to bring the message of his resurrection to the world. Mary Magdalene is known as the apostle to the apostles. Though too many women still experience oppression in the name of religion, Jesus sets women free to their full potential. So, about those credit cards now accessible to women as well as men, too many have found increased burden in their lives due to their credit practices rather than increased empowerment. Let's do something about that, Permian Basin. Basic financial literacy is essential to overall well-being. Have you had a conversation, especially with the young women in your life, about the precious gift of credit and the way it can burden or bless them? Have you talked about developing positive financial habits to keep them free to live the life God intends for them? Our church will hold a free seminar for anyone interested in basic financial wellness Wednesday, April 24th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. in the Connection Center at 4241 Tanglewood Lane. It will be taught by one of our leading financial coaches in the Permian Basin, Leslie Veach, the Chief Lending Officer for My Community Credit Union. A follow-up session will be held for those willing to take the next steps to keep becoming financially healthy. Features from the Bible. Truth in Scripture. The Golden Calves at Bethel and Dan. 1 Kings 12. Jeroboam fortified Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim, and lived there, and went out and built up Peniel. He began to be concerned that if the people went up to offer sacrifices at the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem, they would again give their allegiance to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and would kill him and return to King Rehoboam. Jeroboam made two golden calves and told the people that it was too much for them to go up to Jerusalem, and these calves were their gods who brought them up out of Egypt. One calf was set up in Bethel and the other in Dan. Jeroboam built shrines on high places and appointed priests from all sorts of people, even though they were not Levites. He instituted a festival on the 15th day of the 8th month, like the festival held in Judah, and offered sacrifices on the altars.
Government. New rules passed for pregnant workers. New York. Workers are entitled to time off and other job accommodations for abortions, along with pregnancy-related medical conditions like miscarriage, stillbirth, and lactation, under the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, according to finalized federal regulations published Monday. The regulations provide guidance for employers and workers on how to implement the law, which passed with robust bipartisan congressional support in December 2022, but sparked controversy last year when the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission included abortions in its draft rules. The language means that workers can ask for time off to obtain an abortion and recover from the procedure. The EEOC says its decision to keep the abortion provisions in its final rules, despite criticism from some conservatives, is consistent with its own longstanding interpretation of Title VII, as well as court rulings. The federal agency added that the new law does not obligate employers or employer-sponsored health plans to cover abortion-related costs, and that the type of accommodation that most likely will be sought under the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act regarding an abortion is time off to attend a medical appointment or for recovery, which does not have to be paid. The act requires most employers with 15 or more employees to provide, quote, reasonable accommodations, end quote, for a worker's known limitations related to pregnancy, childbirth, or related medical conditions, including fertility and infertility treatments in some cases, unless the accommodation will cause the employer an undue hardship. The EEOC's regulations will go into effect on June 18th. Labor advocates hailed the new law as especially important for women of color who are most likely to work in low-wage, physically demanding jobs, but are often denied accommodations for everything from time off for medical appointments to the ability to sit or stand on the job. Major business groups also supported the law, citing the need for clarity about the accommodations that employers are required to give pregnant workers. Quote, no one should have to risk their job for their health just because they are pregnant, recovering from childbirth, or dealing with a related medical condition, end quote, said EEOC Chair Charlotte A. Burroughs on Monday. But Republican lawmakers and anti-abortion activists denounced the EEOC's inclusion of abortion after the agency first released its proposed rule in August for a months-long public commentary period. Abortion rights proponents, meanwhile, applauded the provision as critical at a time when abortion rights have been curtailed in many states following the U.S. Supreme Court's 2022 decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. The EEOC is composed of three Democratic commissioners and two Republican commissioners. Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, the lead Republican sponsor of the Pregnant Workers Fairness Law, accused the Biden administration on Monday of, quote, shocking and illegal, end quote, disregard of the legislative process to promote a political agenda. The Alliance Defending Freedom, a conservative Christian legal organization, said the Biden administration was trying to, quote, smuggle an abortion mandate, end quote, into the law. But in comments submitted to the EEOC, the American Civil Liberties Union applauded the agency for, quote, recognizing that abortion has for decades been approved under the law as a related medical condition to pregnancy that entitles workers to reasonable accommodations, including time off to obtain abortion care, end quote. The EEOC said it had received 54,000 comments urging the commission to exclude abortion from its definition of medical condition related to pregnancy, but it also received 40,000 comments supporting its inclusion. While the commission said it understood that both sides were expressing, quote, sincere, deeply held convictions, end quote, it cited numerous federal cases that it said supported its interpretation that that abortion is a pregnancy-related condition deserving of protection. The new rules include extensive details on the types of accommodations that pregnant workers can request, from temporary exemption from jobs duties like heavy lifting to considerations for morning sickness. Women's rights activists had campaigned for years for the law, arguing that the 1978 Pregnancy Discrimination Act offered inadequate protection for pregnant workers. The 1978 law, which amended Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, prohibited discrimination on the basis of pregnancy and marked a major shift for gender equality at a time when pregnant women were routinely denied or pushed out of jobs. But in order to receive workplace accommodations, pregnant women had to demonstrate that co-workers had received similar benefits for comparable needs, since the act stated only that pregnant workers must be treated similarly to other employees, not that they deserve special consideration. That put a burden of proof that many women found impossible to meet, forcing them to work in unsafe conditions or quit their jobs, according to A Better Balance, one of the most vocal advocates for the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. The new law makes clear that pregnant workers are entitled to accommodations to keep doing their jobs, mirroring the process for workers with disabilities. It places the burden on employers to prove, quote, undue hardship, end quote, if they deny requests for modifications. The EEOC typically handles between 2,000 and 4,000 pregnancy discrimination charges a year, many involving denial of workplace accommodations. A study conducted by A Better Balance found that in two-thirds of pregnancy discrimination cases that followed the 2015 Supreme Court ruling, courts determined the employers were allowed to deny accommodations under the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. In a prepared statement, A Better Balance co-president Dina Bast applauded the EEOC, quote, for issuing robust final regulations that appropriately recognize the broad scope of the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, end quote.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.